U.S. Army?
I joined in 06, got out in 12, so 6 years. I was general infantry. Well, I initially signed for a ranger contract, but after I passed airborne school and failed out of RIP, I went needs of the Army. And so what happened is I got sent to Fort Hood to be part of the 3rd Brigade 1st Infantry Division. Basically, what my job was to be part of a well-oiled machine of working as a unit to clear objectives. RIP stands for Ranger Induction Program. It's since changed to RASP, and I couldn't tell you what RASP stands for. It's the it's basically the school that certifies you into being able to be in a ranger battalion. I have mixed feelings about my experience in the military. I greatly appreciate what I gained from the military, but there were many leadership shortfalls that made my experience not quite pleasant. The major issue that I had with a lot of things early on in the military when I was just a young Joe was the idea of mass punishment, holding others accountable for actions that they had no part of. That was a major problem with me. Another specific situation is leaders not listening to subordinates that may have a better idea of what to expect. Well, in middle school, I joined a rifle team. I shot competitively through middle school and all through high school, and I remember that my grandfather was a large influence on that, and he's prior service officer, so I had a little bit of pressure from him to spark my initial interest in the military. And then after watching the events of 9/11, I decided that when I became of age, I was going to join. I was standing at a bus stop getting ready to get picked up for school, and I had popped my neck in a way that made my head stuck. Like, I was stuck in a position with my head horizontal instead of vertical. And so I decided, well, I'm not going to school like this, so I'm going to go home. And I went home and I turned on the TV, and that's when the news was the first channel that came up. And that's about 5 minutes after that is when I watched the first or the second plane hit tower. All I remember is standing up and screaming at the television. I didn't understand. I was young in middle school. And it baffled me that there were people that were capable of such atrocities. I don't know if you're familiar with South Park, but there's an episode where I believe it's Cartman sings a song, and the song goes something like what in the butt, and we once were gearing up to go out on patrol down in Narrow Valley, and we were headed out, and one of our guys was hot miking. And hot miking is basically when you're holding down the key to be able to talk into your microphone unintentionally. So you're speaking over the net without really knowing that you're speaking over the net. And he was singing that song, and that became an ongoing joke towards him for the rest of the time that I knew him. Well, he was just singing the what in the butt song. It sounds like what in the butt. You want to put what in my butt? Want to put what in my butt? Okay. And it was pretty humorous. And he finished the entire stanza without any interruptions before people started coming out. I think that people actually wanted to hear what he had to say. Two combat tours. My first combat tour was in the Kunar province. Well-known part of the Kunar province is the Korngal Valley. There's been multiple documentaries, well-known documentaries made of 173rd's action, which is the airborne unit that preceded us in that valley specifically. I was stationed in what's called the Pesh River Valley, which is the second largest valley in the Kunar province, second only to the Kunar Valley. And my camp was wedged in between the Waterpur and the Korngal Valley, which were the two major hotspots in the province. My second deployment was more political, down in Khost province, somewhat near the city of Khost, but we were out near a rural town named Terzai. Basically, it was more show face than anything else. On my first deployment, before I even became a specialist, so I was still a private, now as a driver, we went on a joint operation with one of our sister platoons in the company, and the infill went perfect. My platoon's job was to provide overwatch, and at the time I was a 240 gunner, heavy machine gunner, and no incidents happened during the operation. Everything went smoothly. They conducted what was called a KLE, key leaders engagement, with the village elders, and we loaded back up in our vehicles, and we prepared to move. And then before we moved, we had Kiowa's small helicopters on station, and they did a sweep through the valley that we were going to exfil through, just to make sure it was all clear. We wanted to, you know, for them to get a bird's eye view and let us know if there was any potential ambush. They gave us the all clear, and then we started moving out, and about 20 minutes away from the camp, the lead element, our sister platoon that we were working with, walked into a complex ambush. They were disabled pretty much instantly, and comms went down. One of those leadership shortfalls that I mentioned before, we had two platoons on the same net. So everyone was talking on the radio, and no information could actually be disseminated out about how bad it was during this. That platoon was trying to get a 9-line worked up for someone that had been injured, took a Dishka round, which a 50 caliber round to the side. He ultimately died, not because we weren't able to get a 9-line set up, but he was doomed from the start. And I think that the worst part of that engagement for me is I wasn't in the initial engagement, though we did move forward and push through the kill zone after first platoon was clear. Was listening to the panic over the radio as trucks were being hit with RPGs and people were screaming into the mic, and being a driver, basically sitting in a cage waiting to see what was going to hit my truck, and being at the rear of the pack, completely dependent on orders to move forward. My initial instinct was to step on the gas and get up there as fast as I could, but of course I had three vehicles in front of me in my platoon that prohibited me from doing that, along with the truck commander that pulled the reins on me and kept me calm through the ordeal. After first platoon had pushed through, we pushed into the kill zone, and what they were doing, the enemy, were they were staging next to the cliff. And throughout the Kunar province, most roads are built on cliffs, so you have a sheer cliff going down on one side and a sheer cliff going up on the other side of the road. And so these guys were pushed up flat against the cliff waiting for our trucks to roll by, which at that time it was dark, so it was harder to see them. We of course used night vision, so it wasn't impossible. But they would let the trucks roll past, and then they would jump in between the trucks and start firing, and then they would jump off this the cliff on the other side down into a little wadi for an escape route. And we were the rear of the element, the complete rear of the element. So what we ended up doing after we went black on ammo was passing all the grenades up to the gunner, all the grenades in the truck up to the gunner. And what he was doing as we were pushing through the kill zone was dropping grenades into the wadi to try to get anybody that was trying to exfil after engaging us to discourage, kill, or maim as many as we could. That was one of the low points of my first deployment. We obviously didn't know how bad it was until we got back to the camp and were then informed that someone had died. And it, up until that point, I think that was month two, and in that deployment, up until that point, it was hectic, and we had a lot that we dealt with, but that incident really made it that made it real for me. It brought me down to realize what kind of situation we were really in. It's hard for me to gauge any kind of setback or progress because the experiences that altered me happened throughout a 6-year period, and it's hard for me to gauge how much I've actually changed and how much I've actually bounced back. I know I've struggled with things, and I continue struggling with some things, and I think that she'd be able to answer that question. I'm pretty positive that she would tell you that reintegration is not complete yet. Well, initially I signed up for Colorado State University. That's the first college that I applied to. I wasn't allowed in because when I was in high school, I didn't care about grades. I didn't care about anything. I didn't think I was going to be, you know, pursuing school at all. Because once I came out of middle school, I was already had my mindset that I was going to join the military. And so my GPA was not even close to par. And so what I planned on doing there from that point was going into what was called a community college in the area, Front Range College, in Fort Collins. And then my wife mentioned, you know, we could just go back home and you could go to Evergreen. And she had gone to Evergreen prior, so she had experience with the college. She told me what it was all about and how it operated. And I was attracted by the idea of no real prereqs and no required courses that I was going to have to take. The ability to mold my own degree plan, which is surprising because one of the reasons that I joined the military in the first place was a fear of lack of control, like, or too much control, lack of structure in the college environment. And that lack of structure is what ultimately brought me into Evergreen. My first quarter at Evergreen, we went on a retreat up to Mount Rainier, and we followed the Nisqually River all the way down to the estuary. We toured a dam at Evergreen, or not at Evergreen, but on the Nisqually. We hiked up Mount Rainier, not to the summit, but up one the Nisqually face of the mountain, and then we went down a float trip down the river, on which I counted about 25 bald eagles, which was pretty cool. And I think that it was a great introduction to the college, and it was my first point and a high point. Moving from the military culture and Evergreen culture is quite a culture shock. It's very different, but it's valuable if you approach it correctly. You're going to encounter people that don't agree with anything you have to say purely because you're a veteran. There will be people that have different viewpoints than you, and typically at Evergreen, everyone has a very strong voice about what they believe and why they believe it, and that's a very valuable thing that I found at Evergreen that you don't really find in the military, in my experience anyway, because everyone is programmed to work as the team, in the direction that the team's moving, whereas Evergreen is very individual. If for anyone coming into the structure of Evergreen, I would recommend knowing what path you want to take in your academic career before starting, because the way that Evergreen is structured, you can be led astray and waste all of your benefits taking courses that may interest you but don't lead you to anything that's tangible. So that's something to definitely take into account and to keep an open mind, because people are different, and it's good to listen to them even if they don't really know what they're talking about. I've had a great experience at Evergreen. I've met a lot of people that I disagree with on many different topics, and we've all learned from each other, and I've had a fantastic experience. I've learned a lot from myself, from my professors, and there's only two programs that I didn't enjoy, be it because of subject matter or the structure of the program itself. Race was never really an issue with me in the military, not towards me. I did witness injustices on others based on ethnicity, but I never experienced any kind of racial tension, even between me and my comrades. It was just a couple of leaders in particular that had kind of a twisted view on how things were. And then jumping into Evergreen, I have not witnessed any racial issues, but we have a strong culture of Evergreen that is very degrading towards our female population. And that's the major problem that I see in our college. I know of a few females that have been sexually assaulted on the grounds, and the program that we have in place as a college to help people through a situation like that is not effective. It does a lot of victim shaming, which is unacceptable, and it doesn't promote long-term treatment, or even trying to get to the bottom of the issue. And not only that, but we have registered sex offenders at Evergreen that are repeat offenders and are rated at a high degree, which in other institutions you wouldn't see them even able to register. And I don't believe that they should be able to register.